Fantasy Freaks.
It's What's Up. We welcome you into the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. James Coe here with you, joined along Zach by the Wizkid from Wisconsin. He has returned.
I'm back.
Welcome back.
He has returned.
I'm no longer in the jury box.
It is Alex Gellar. I feel as if Matt Franchise has been on this podcast more often than you.
Possibly.
Over the last
week. I was gone for legitimately a calendar month.
That's
the first
crazy.
Day I reported for jury duty was
God.
March 1st, and the last day of the trial I was serving on was April 2nd.
Unreal.
Yeah.
Unreal.
It was lengthy.
Feel good to be back?
Yeah, it feels great to be back now. I'm behind on everything
of
at
course.
Work. But it was also a rewarding experience, I will say. You know, serving on a jury is a pretty cool part of the American democratic system we have here, and it's somewhat unique in the world. A lot of other places have professional jurors and situations like that, so it's pretty cool that, you know, in the whole process, you're always it's a trial by your peers.
I feel happy not only because you're back on the podcast, but also you've returned with the Get a Life shirt.
Get a Life shirt. The
Get a Life
gift
shirt.
Franchise. I figured
Let's
for
go.
My triumphant return, I'd throw it back to this.
All right. We'll throw it on the IG a little later as well. We got MG, my guy, Marcus Grant, in the building. What's going on, man?
What's going on, man?
How you doing?
It's good.
Baseball's back.
Baseball's back.
It's back, baby.
Yeah. I was at Dodger Stadium on opening day. Saw a little Dodger on Dodger violence.
Okay.
That was interesting.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's a good day. But baseball's back. It's cool. Like, this is the time of year where I can sit at my desk and I'm working and, you know, maybe I'm watching tape, but also on the side, like, I have a ball game on.
Oh, sure.
And that's pretty good.
You've got the NL represented. And, of course, Adam Rank over there has the AL West represented at all times on his television screen.
That's right.
So there you go.
That's right.
We've got the entire West Coast covered up in baseball. We've got producer Christina here
What's
as
up?
Well. What's up? How you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Chilling?
I'm chilling.
How was your week?
It was good. It was good. I went away for the weekend.
Oh.
Yeah, I went to Big Bear.
Oh, you were on that. I just saw some pictures popping up on Twitter.
I saw some of the IG photos.
Okay.
Yes. It was fun.
Looks like Sully had himself a really good time.
Sean Sullivan always has himself a good time.
If anybody had a great time, Sully had a great time.
That's true for any event that Sean Sullivan attends.
Is awesome. What'd you guys do? Rent a cabin or something?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, we
There's no snow on the ground up there, is there?
Not really, no.
Yeah, okay.
No, it was pretty warm. It was like mid-60s all weekend.
Oh, wow.
That's nice.
So, yeah, it was really nice.
I'm actually doing that this weekend.
Are you?
A buddy's bachelor party. All he wanted to do, we're going to Arrowhead, though. All he wanted to do was, like, just have a low-key event, like, not do Vegas, nothing crazy. So we got a cabin.
A cabin.
We're going to go up there, you know, have some drinks, go out for a nice dinner on Saturday.
Breathe in that mountain air.
Exactly. Get out of L.A. for a little bit. It'll be nice.
Let's go. Great show in front of us here today. We've got a lot of headlines, obviously, but we're also going to be chatting with Steve Clarkson, a noted quarterbacks coach. He's worked with guys like Ben Roethlisberger, Matt Barkley, Jake Locker, Brett Hundley, to name a few. Did I mention Big Ben? Oh, yes, I did.
You did.
Yes. So a number of guys, and obviously he's located here in Southern California and has worked with so many Southern California quarterbacks, but has also worked with other notable quarterbacks from around the nation as well. We're going to be chatting with him. He'll give us his thoughts on Josh Rosen, Darnold, Lamar Jackson as well. And I promise you, he's got a very interesting story. Does Steve Clarkson, a personal story for him as well. We'll probably dive into that as well. We'll close out your show with a round of daily daps, but we shall start your show as we always do with your top fantasy headlines.
Oh my God, the news!
We really do have breaking news.
Hey, did you guys know that the Eagles, the Patriots, are playing in the Super Bowl?
That is breaking news.
Breaking news.
News. I just realized, Alex Gellhart, is this the first time you've heard the new drops?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I didn't listen to a single podcast while I was gone. And I saw you point, and I was like, we have drops finally.
Hey,
hooray.
We got drops.
So that's exciting.
Yeah, it is.
Well done. I like that.
Yeah, you lead it off every time.
I do.
Matt Franchise still lives on.
He does. Forever in our hearts and in that drop.
In the podcast as well, so it's good. All right, let's start with, oh my goodness, the Rams. I mean, just unbelievable. Last week it was the signing of Ndamukong Suh to pair with Aaron Donald. This week they traded for speedy wide receiver Brandon Cooks. They sent New England their first round 23rd overall pick this year. New England also got a 6th round pick. L.A. got Cooks and a 4th. I got to be honest with you, man. This is the kind of move you see teams make with veteran quarterbacks or veteran team that is going for it. They are going for it with a 23-year-old quarterback in Jared Goff. I don't know if we've ever seen this before.
I mean, yeah, it's a little different without all the pieces they've traded for, but it does kind of make sense. You know, teams, when you have a quarterback on his rookie deal, you have a limited window to use the rest of your salary cap to add other players. Some teams have gotten lucky in that window, like the Seahawks, where they had drafted a lot of those really, really great players. But with the Rams, you know, you look at the rest of the makeup of their team, they're probably going to resign. They got to resign Donald. He's going to be a big cap hit.
Right.
Gurley's going to be coming off his rookie deal soon. Goff, yep. This is his third year, so he's only got two more years on it. Kind of makes sense to just
go for
broke right now. Because that's afterwards, right. Otherwise, you're going to have to fork over a bunch of money for Goff, and then Gurley's going to need to get extended, and then all that cap space evaporates. So I think it's a cool move. Like, I think it's
so smart.
It's an awesome acknowledgement of where they are right now.
Right.
They got to the playoffs last year. Goff is not, you know, top tier, but he's going to have another year in McVay's system. He showed some stuff last year, and I think it's pretty cool. It's exciting.
Well, I mean, and I think we saw last year the fact that Blake Bortles got to the AFC Championship game. I mean, it's great to have a Rodgers, Brady, you know, whatever kind of quarterback, but obviously – if you have all the other pieces in place, it's not quite as necessary. And I do think they feel like what they saw from Jared Goff last year gives them reason to feel confident to go for it. And, you know, if for whatever reason it doesn't work out this year, they will still have some of that money to go out and sign other guys. You mean,
right.
You know, Alex mentioned, you know, Gurley and Donald and, you know, guys like Sue are in the end of their deal, Tlaib. And so they've got opportunities. So it's going to be interesting. I will say that, you know, I worry from a fantasy standpoint about how this works with Cooks and Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods,
okay,
and what they do with the tight ends and Todd Gurley. Like,
all right, so let's start there.
A lot of targets.
Let's start there from a fantasy perspective. I know we've been talking a lot of real football as of late, but it is a fantasy podcast. Let's start there with Brandon Cooks. Okay, so now he's with Sean McVay. He's got Jared Goff as quarterback. Obviously, a downgrade for him from Tom Brady, but. Give me some projections, early projections maybe, here for Brandon Cooks. What are we thinking here? Because, again, if he's filling that Sammy Watkins role, Sammy Watkins had, I don't know, what, 700 yards and eight touchdowns?
He didn't even hit 600.
Yard. Yeah, he was under 600 yards.
600-some-odd yards, 656 or something like that, and eight touchdowns. Is that a baseline? I mean, maybe more yardage, less touchdowns for Brandon Cooks? I mean, what do we think?
I definitely think more yardage. I mean, I think Cooks can get to or at least close to 1,000 yards this year. And actually, I don't know that eight touchdowns is unreasonable for Brandon Cooks in that offense.
I'm concerned fantasy-wise. This is a great move football-wise. But yeah. Cooks, only Brandon Cooks and Antonio Brown, I think, are the two players in the NFL over the last 3 years to go for 1,000 yards and seven touchdowns in each season.
Okay.
However, you look at this Rams offense and Sean McVay's history, dating back to even when he was the guy in Washington, they spread that ball around so much. And it's all about creating mismatches and creating opportunities. It does not funnel into any one guy.
Sure, sure.
Cooks has had over 100 targets in each of these last couple of years, and he might have a hard time pushing that in this offense, especially if he's that deep seam-stretching guy that Sammy Watkins was to take the top off the defense. I mean, we saw Woods do that a little bit, but you know Kupp's going to get his as a possession receiver. Gurley's going to be there. It's just it concerns me a lot for his outlook. Like all of these guys, I was actually just working on my top 200 before we came up here. Want to get one out pre-draft, and I slid down Woods, Cooks, and Kupp just because they're a great trio, but it's hard to see any of them getting any sort of consistent volume on a weekly basis in fantasy to like rely upon them.
I like the fact they made this trade before OTAs and training camp. I mean, they're going to give Brandon Cooks the full opportunity, unlike Sammy Watkins, because remember, he just was dropped in, you know, practically, you know, right before the season started. You know what I mean? So he didn't really have an opportunity to understand the playbook and build that chemistry with Jared Goff. So I like the fact that they got it done early. Okay, now, as we've seen with a lot of different, you know, places where they have a lot of different weapons, and maybe you're a little hesitant to pick up that weapon, the quarterback generally benefits. Does Jared Goff benefit?
I think it a little bit, but the great Rich Rebar over at Roto World was throwing a bit of cold water on the Goff breakout as well with this extra weapon.
Okay.
He said Goff had, because he points out a bunch of good stats, Goff had six touchdown receptions. His RBs had six touchdown receptions last year.
Yeah.
He totaled eight passing touchdowns on throws behind the line of scrimmage. Those are huge TD boosters. And on top of that, we were just talking about a second ago with them going for broke. They added so many pieces on defense.
Yep,
a much better defense could lead to some regression in their scoring opportunities because they don't need to put up as many points.
Interesting.
They're not in as many barn burners. They're just controlling the clock more. I think, like, Goff is certainly a guy to throw a late-round dart at, but I don't know that I'm going to be like, all in on him as my late round quarterback option.
No, I think he remains kind of a streaming quarterback.
Yes.
He's a situational guy depending on the matchup and on that week. They obviously did some very good things with him and made him more confident, but I don't know that all of a sudden, he's going to turn into, Kirk Cousins or anything like that and start slinging the ball all over the lot. So, 28-7 last year, 28 touchdowns, 7 interceptions.
Yeah.
That's a good ratio. Maybe that touchdown number goes up a little bit.
Or maybe it comes down.
Maybe it evens out
to like a 25, which is still solid,
but
fantasy, it's not what you're excited about. And I just wanted to pull it up for reference.
Right.
Here's how split up their passing attack was last year. Cooper Kupp led the team with 94 targets. Then it was Gurley with 87, Woods with 85, Watkins with 70.
Yeah, Gurley the second most targeted. Oh, okay.
But, you figure it's probably going to be something close to a four-way split again. Maybe Cooks is in that 90 range. But, again, what are you going to drop in draft capital for a 90-target receiver in a spread-it-out offense with a great defense?
You know what? You're right. Jared Goff last year just adding the yardage to the 28-7, 3,800 yards, passing yards for Jared Goff, 100 quarterback rating, which is pretty damn good. For a kid that was 23 years old. Just getting into the Rams schedule very quickly here. I think the NFC West is going to be extremely soft coming into 2018, which is not something you would expect to say.
Hey, put some spec on his 49ers name over there.
I think I'm just saying defensively. You look at the Seahawks. Obviously, they've been decimated. The Arizona Cardinals, not the same team. The San Francisco 49ers were a mess defensively last year. And while I think they'll be a better real-life football team, I think defensively I still think they will be relatively middle of the pack. They still have a long way to go defensively. Let's just put it that way. All right, that being said, you kind of take a look. All of those games are kind of packed into the back half of the schedule, okay, because early on it's going to be the Cardinals, the Packers, the Chiefs, the Chargers, the Vikings, the Eagles. Those are a lot of tough defenses there. If you're thinking about the Chargers being a good defense, the Vikings being a good defense, the Eagles obviously got a great defense as well. So, there will be spots, as you guys mentioned, to maybe possibly stream Jared Goff. But if you're drafting him to be your every week starter for the first half of the fantasy season,
I wouldn't advise that.
Yeah, it doesn't sound advisable as of yet. But again, he's one of those guys where, if you're, reserving a bench spot for a quarterback, why not? All right, by trading Cooks and getting a first-round pick back, speculation began ramping up that the Patriots could make a run at Odell Beckham Jr.
One, no.
let me lay it out, though, all right? The Patriots got, in this upcoming draft, they've got two first-round picks, two second-round picks, and a third-round pick in addition to, a couple 6th and 7th round picks as well. That's a lot of draft capital, man.
It is a lot of draft capital, but I remember that seeing that rumor pop up, and we all grumbled about the potential of the Patriots of all teams getting Odell Beckham. And
Tom Brady, Odell,
but then,
what? Come on.
There were a lot of reports that started throwing cold water on it, and suggesting instead that maybe they're looking at Tom Brady's potential replacement.
That would be
I
don't know.
Look, it's be interesting. Look, so they can take those two picks and maybe trade them potentially for Odell Beckham, or they can package some things and try to move up in the draft if there's one of these quarterbacks that they really love. If they love a Josh Rosen or whomever else that they think they can mold and put in after Tom Brady is finally gone, that to me seems a little more realistic.
They've also never been a team that's needed a crazy wide receiver like that. The one time they did get that guy was Randy Moss.
They went 16-1.
They went to the Super Bowl and then lost to Eli Manning.
But also, they went 16-0.
They did, but they don't need to waste all that draft capital on – not waste. That's the wrong way to put it, because trading for Odell Beckham's a great move for any team, honest opinion. However, they have Julian Edelman coming back. They have Chris Hogan. They have Malcolm Mitchell still. Brandon Cooks, who they flipped the first four last year and then got a higher first round this year for him, went out in that Super Bowl. He got concussed and they still almost won. So I don't think this is a move for them to go get Odell Beckham. I think, as Marcus said, the reporters pointed out, it makes much more sense, especially for them having traded away Jake Brisket, having traded away Jimmy Garoppolo.
Sure.
All they have is Brian Hoyer behind Tom Brady right now. But Tom Brady. That's like an 80-year-old quarterback room. they're gonna go get a younger guy.
Okay, now, I think the counter-argument to that, though, would be clearly this is a Patriots team that is not thinking about the future, because why would you trade away Jimmy G for a second-round pick if you weren't loading up to try to win a couple more Super Bowls right now? Tom Brady, as you mentioned, is going to be 41 when the year starts. And yes, if you're thinking about longevity for the franchise, yeah, sure, you go get that quarterback. But I think in trading away Jimmy G, I think that ship has sailed.
You got to remember the deals, though. Jimmy G was at the end of his rookie deal. If they were going to try and keep him, they were going to have to fork over a lot of money for a backup or get rid of Tom Brady. This way, they keep their championship window open by still having Brady for God knows how long he's going to play, you know, 45,
beating,
50, 60.
He's Father Time. That's what I've been told.
Yeah, but you know, Father Time is undefeated.
It's undefeated in one because Tom Brady's beating him.
For now. It's in round 15, 16. We'll see when Father Time comes roaring back. But anyways, like, it was the timing of the deals. Like, Jimmy G's deal expiring meant they basically had to trade him and get as much as they could or just lose him and, like, get a fourth-round compensatory pick.
I will say one other reason that I don't think this happens for Odell is this is the last year of his deal. He's a free agent.
Yeah.
They're not going to give up that kind of draft capital, because we know that the Patriots aren't going to turn around and pay a guy like Odell whatever market value.
They'd have to make him the highest-paid receiver in the league.
They're not going to do that. We just know that that's not how they operate. Okay. So to give up two first-round draft picks for a guy that you're going to have for 1 year, I just don't see any way they do that.
Hey, listen, can a man just dream?
No, we don't. No, we're not dreaming about this, James. We're not.
Also, fantasy wise,
I'm not Tamposi. I'm just saying. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing Odell team up with Brady and wrecking shop.
The dream would have been to have him come to Los Angeles and join the Rams.
Yes.
And then it would spawn my idea of a reality show.
Okay.
Where Odell Beckham Jr.
OBJ.
Yasiel Puig,
your friend.
And Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Oh, my God.
Just travel around and crash house parties in L.A. and just show up at people's houses, and we just see what sort of comedy ensues.
That would be
amazing.
That'd be the most lit show ever.
Right?
The amount of ego on that show would be out of control between the three of them.
Of
balance. I mean, we'll get to it in Daily Depths, but Zlatan took out a full-page ad when the Galaxy signed him in the L.A. Times that just said Los Angeles.
You're welcome.
Signed, Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Unbelievable. I love it, man.
But anyways, I think we shouldn't want it to happen for fantasy purposes, because Beckham right now, if he stays in New York, will still be great. If he gets traded to another team, could be great. And we have the opportunity, you know, assuming Gronk stays put or whatever, for the Patriots to have a nice, pretty concentrated passing attack with Hogan, who, don't forget, was on a pretty good stretch there for a while with, like, 60-plus yards and a touchdown in, like, four or five straight games.
I mean, all these guys. I mean,
Hogan, Edelman, and Gronk, it'll be a solid trio for Brady.
Those wide receivers you mentioned, those guys, they're just guys. And I get it. The Patriots have gotten by with just plain guys.
Don't you disrespect 7-Eleven like that. He's always open, James. Just a guy went for like 128 and a touchdown in the Super Bowl.
With Tom Brady in great game plan. Look, he's just a guy, man.
Yeah, but just a guy is in the Patriots offense do wonders for fantasy.
The system they got there in New England, unbelievable, because they could take these guys and turn him into, you know, viable NFL.
Ultimate Jag, Jonas Gray had 200 yards and four touchdowns or whatever.
That's what I'm saying. Man. Jonas Gray.
But in that offense, Jags can overperform. And yes, I think you're disrespecting Edelman and Hogan a bit there.
All right. Okay. We'll move on. Jordan Reed is hurt already.
So wow. Sad.
He's going to miss OTAs because he's having a quote-unquote procedure done on his toe, something that has bothered him all of last year. I love that they call it a procedure, by the way. It's surgery. Okay.
Procedure sounds so much nicer.
It sounds so much nicer,
Minor procedure. No, he was chopped open.
No. you're getting surgery on the toe. No, I'm getting a procedure, but it's a surgery. It's a procedure. Okay. All right, it's a surgery. He's having toe surgery, folks. It might be minor, okay?
But minor surgery is what happens to other people.
Okay. That's right, what happens to you.
It's not minor, what happens to you.
But yes.
This, I want to raise this question, because as I was looking at my top 200, I've been being, you know, confronted with a lot of fantasy conundrums for this coming
Please
year.
Please don't put Jordan Reed.
No. What do we make of the Washington passing attack? Because it has changed so dramatically. Much. I mean, Jordan Reed, always a question mark with his injuries. But now Alex Smith is in there. What does that mean for Jamison Crowder? Is Josh Doctson ever going to fully ascend to his talent potential? They also went and got Paul Richardson.
Yeah.
So, like, I was looking at all three of those guys, and I'm like, man, I like each of these wide receivers, but in this – offense with Alex Smith under center, I wasn't quite sure where to slide everybody.
I think it has the sneaky potential to be good, or it could just be like a wow, what's going on here sort of thing. Like it could, but like individually, I like all those guys. I like Jamison Crowder. I like what Josh Doctson can be. I like what Paul Richardson can be. We know what Jordan Reed is when he's healthy. Like these are all pieces that if they stay healthy and if they perform up to expectations. Yeah, this could be a sneaky good passing game. But, you know, if Reed stays hurt, if Doctson continues to underperform, if Paul Richardson doesn't develop the way we think, then suddenly this looks like a train wreck waiting to happen.
The thing I like about the addition of Paul Richardson especially is the fact that he provides more speed on the outside, right? Mm-hmm. So now you've got two guys with decent speed on the outside, and Paul Richardson.
And two guys that can go up and get it, too.
Yeah. Like, oh, for sure.
Doctson, I mean, and Richardson. Yeah.
Richardson didn't know how to catch a normal pass last year. Like, he had to be jumping over somebody, falling down.
That's right. And that, yeah,
one handed behind the back.
That's exactly right. Both these guys are great contested catch guys. And then you've got a pretty reliable underneath guy in Crowder's. So the table is set, certainly, for Alex Smith, who has been a pretty accurate quarterback, who has been able to read defenses and get to the open guy.
He's been a quarterback that's been able to buoy a couple of decent fantasy options. You know, you look back, he had Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill the last couple of years.
Right.
He helped prop up Dwayne Bowe in the past, and guys in San Francisco with Vernon Davis and Crabtree for a while. So, you know, it's not like –
Who's the tight end here?
Jordan Reed.
Jordan Reed.
Because Niles Paul went somewhere else, right?
They also have – what's his name? It's escaping me.
They still have, Logan Paulson's not there anymore.
I think Logan
we'll
Paulson
have to look it up, but,
too, but I'd be interested in
– Niles Paul's in Jacksonville.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be interested in the Washington tight end not named Jordan Reed.
It could be a case where maybe he doesn't funnel as much to the tight end if
he's,
Jordan
but
Reed
But he's done
there.
It his whole career.
He has.
His whole career. Alex Smith I'm talking about. Oh, it's Vernon
Davis.
Vernon
Davis is still there,
oh
right?
Oh, my God.
They're reunited.
It's a reunited. Yes!
Wow, that took us way too long to get there.
How did we miss this? How did we miss this storyline?
Vernon Davis, Alex Smith reunited.
Oh, my God.
We've got one of our early season narratives. Alex
Let's
Smith.
Go!
He's
Vernon Davis.
Here's the narrative. Yes. They're comfortable. They've worked together. They know each other.
You know?
So look for Vernon Davis to get a lot of early targets as Alex Smith works into the offense.
You know, Jordan Reed's already hurt. You know what I mean?
God.
He's missing OTAs.
There it is.
It's happening, baby!
I can't wait to
it's happening,
I
baby.
Can't wait to use my last pick in so many drafts
Vernon
on
Davis.
Vernon Davis.
Late round steal that you trade after week three once Alex Smith gets more comfortable with everybody else.
Because Jordan Reed's out, you pick up Vernon Davis, he starts running train, then you flip him, and then you're good. You coast. There you go. We just told you all how to win your league.
My God,
you're welcome. Like Zlatan would say,
you're welcome.
There you go. Robbie Anderson had the felony charges dropped from his case. That's good for him. Still faces a number of misdemeanor counts, though. It looks like serious jail time might be off the table for now for Robbie Anderson. How the league responds is yet to be seen, but I would imagine Robbie Anderson, from a fantasy perspective, you could probably take him off the radar. I got to imagine some kind of suspension will be coming down his way.
You know who to circle, though, is Jermaine Kearse. Could be, especially if Anderson's suspended for a couple games early on. Kearse had some decent play last year, and as like a super late-round guy or somebody to pick up off the waivers, I mean, we're obviously months and months away from drafts, don't forget about Jermaine Kearse. We got a little bit on our Never Jets bandwagon last year, and there turned out to be plenty of useful players from that Jets offense.
Yeah, yeah.
Jermaine Kearse is certainly somebody who found some success there, and especially if just through the war of attrition is the number one option there, don't forget about him.
All right, RG3 back in the league. The Baltimore Ravens announcing that they signed RG3, Robert Griffin III, to a one-year deal to back up Joe Flacco. Not fantasy relevant, but
worth noting.
Worth noting. Interesting note to see RG3 back in the league, so there you go. All right, how about the Cleveland Browns? They completed their future championship roster by signing a wide receiver.
Book it.
That is likely to break out for 1,500 yards and 15 touchdowns. It's happening, folks. They signed wide receiver Jeff
Janice.
I mean, really, this is a special teams move.
Yeah.
I just know that, you know.
But well, I figured Alex Kilhart coming back onto the podcast.
Might as well get it in.
Got to get a little Janice talk.
Get a little Janice talk in.
Fanboys across America's Dairyland are heartbroken right now.
That's right. That's right. You know, he's not with the Packers. Now he's with the Cleveland Browns.
Still crazy that Jeff Janis is a co-author of one of the best plays in the last like 10 years of the NFL playoffs.
Amazing.
Remember earlier this offseason when you know the Browns made all these moves? I was like, man, the Browns are really going for it. And then the Rams are like, hold my beer.
All right, we go to the phones. We welcome in Steve Clarkson, noted quarterbacks coach. He's the quarterbacks coach that has worked one-on-one with a number of notable quarterbacks, including Big Ben, Ben Roethlisberger, Deshaun Watson, Matt Barkley, Jake Locker, Brett Hundley. The list goes on and on and on. Mr. Clarkson, you are a staple here in Southern California football. We welcome you into the program. How you doing, man?
I'm doing just fine. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, listen, you worked briefly with Josh Rosen. There's been so many stories about his character, about, you know, how he kind of attacks playbooks and maybe challenges coaches and staff. And what was he like to work with in your short time together?
Number one, Josh is really, he is who he is. But the one thing I can tell you more than anything else, he loves the game of football. Yeah, I keep hearing this rhetoric about, you know, is the game important to him or is he too smart for his own good? And I've found him to be very pleasant to be around. And he's a guy that is willing to learn. He puts the time in, and quite frankly, like I said, I spent some time with him. It's been limited, but the time that I spent with him, he's been nothing but basically a dream to work with.
He's from Manhattan Beach. Obviously, you work very closely with a lot of quarterbacks from the Southern California area and really nationwide, but again, you're a staple here in SoCal. I know you've been following Rosen for a bit. I mean, it's hard not to. Went to UCLA, was a big name here. What have you seen from him mechanically, maybe, that has improved during his, you know, college tenure?
Well, that's the thing. A lot of people get caught up in mechanics, and his mechanics are really refined from the get-go. I mean, he was a kid that, you know, back in St. John Bosco, really he was back to him playing in the Snoop Leagues. There wasn't anything that you ever had to tweak with him. He just had a natural throwing motion. And, you know, in the game, you know, especially when you're evaluating quarterbacks, it's about imitation, not innovation. People are always looking, you know, to have you be, you know, who does he compare to? And I've heard the Drew Brees comparisons, but I actually think that he compares favorably to a former UCLA player, number one pick, Troy Aikman. Same type of throwing motion, very, very tough, great anticipation, great pocket awareness. I mean, you know, Troy was athletic, but he's not a guy who's going to take off down the field. That's just like Josh. I mean, he's a lot more athletic than he gets credit for, but his demeanor is very much like Troy Aikman.
You know, Steve, when you work with guys, I mean, people look at that, you know, the combine or pro days, and everybody has their opinion on how much or little these things matter in the overall scheme of things. But when you work with a guy, what are some of the things you're telling him to work on or to look out for, knowing, you know, what the evaluators might be looking for?
Well, the biggest thing is just to go back and analyze, you know, what you've done over the years, because basically that's what you're really going to get graded on. And I think, you know, I watch a lot of these workouts now, and you know, there's, you know, 70 throws, 75 throws. And really, scouts just want it to be about, look, here's what he did. How does he compare to what we want him to do? And it's really a fine line. It's really more or less what you really are trying to do in these workouts. It's not so much as a game as it is a performance. It's almost like a play, so to speak. And you study a script, and then you go out there and you perform the script. But when you're doing an individual workout, meaning a team comes in and they work you out, they basically are going to throw everything at you, and they want to see, you know, how you handle, you know, the hot water, cold water, whatever you want to call it, because they want to catch you off guard. And so what I try to tell most of these guys is to try to analyze who may be looking for a quarterback in the draft and make sure in your workouts that you implement things that you see those teams running, so that when you get that call and you want that private workout, you have at least a basic understanding, a foundation to work with, so that you can be successful.
Hey, I know that you also worked a bit with Deshaun Watson. And a big part of what you do there with your quarterback camps is not only working with guys on the field, but kind of what we're talking about now, off-the-field stuff as well. I know you've been a big proponent of Deshaun Watson. Again, what was he kind of like to work with, you know, off the field? I know he's been a lot of folks have said he's a pretty high-character guy.
Well, I never really worked with Deshaun. Deshaun came and worked my camps, the quarterback retreat that I run every May.
Right.
But I've analyzed him greatly. And the thing that you look for that you can't really teach is he has that it factor. There's something about him that just conveys confidence, not arrogance, but like, you know, it's going to be okay. No matter what's on the other side of that line of scrimmage, we're going to be able to handle it because my man here, he's equipped to handle anything that you throw at him. And I think that's the thing that you really look for. Sometimes, you know, the tape doesn't always tell you what you need to know. You get that when you meet the man in person and you see how people gravitate to him, how he interacts with people, you know, how he handles, you know, adversity. You can't necessarily see that on the tape, but you see it in person.
So we talk about Rosen. On the other side, there was Sam Darnold playing at USC. I don't know if you've ever had a chance to meet with him or work with him, but when you see Sam Darnold play, and obviously interceptions and turnovers have been a big, critical point for Sam there, but what do you see from a game tape standpoint regarding Darnold?
Well, the thing that you see that you're most impressed with is he's still relatively young. People don't realize he hadn't played quarterback all that long. I think he spent some of his earlier youth years playing linebacker. And, so when I see him, he reminds me a lot of which he reminds me greatly of Carson Wentz. I mean, he has that kind of, you know, sneaky elusiveness. He can throw the ball from a variety of angles. What I love about him is he doesn't seem to get rattled one way or another. I mean, so, you know, he's never too high, never too low. He's very even keel. Again, he has that something that you just don't really teach. He has this innate ability to just kind of turn nothing into something. Sometimes it gets you into trouble, but, you know, with great players, that will tend to happen when you're always competing. And that's, Sam is a picture of that.
One of the guys we haven't talked about yet is Baker Mayfield, and I wanted to go back. You mentioned with Deshaun Watson, he just kind of had that it factor, and I felt that was – I never met with him, but I felt that was pretty evident when he was coming out of the draft last year. And I feel like Baker maybe might have a little bit of that as well, despite some of his flaws. He walked on to two different universities. Some of the stories we're hearing is that he's got that magnetic personality. Have you heard anything similar? Is there anything that you've watched from his game tape that might speak towards that kind of that character he has on the field and being a leader and having that it factor?
Well, he's kind of a combination of a couple of people. When I watch him on the field, the first thing that you look at, he's very fiery, very competitive. He's a winner. I mean, the thing about walking on at two different schools and then coming to, you know, taking those obstacles and putting himself in a position where he's at today speaks volumes to his character and his love of the game. I mean, I get the sense that Baker's that kind of kid that you grew up with. And, you know, if it were thundering out there and, you know, the weather conditions were at absolute worst, or everybody would want to be crawled up inside with a blanket, he'd be that kid saying, "Let's go outside and play." I mean, he seems to be that guy.
Right.
And I think that's what makes him so unique. You know, people have tried to compare him to Drew Brees, too, and I don't think he has that because I don't think he passes within the pocket as well as Drew. But I do believe that he is creative. I do believe that, his arm is much stronger. The other comparison he gets is Johnny Manziel. I think that's maybe not as fair. I think people kind of see, you know, some of the antics that he's done on the field and kind of, you know, correlate that to Johnny, but I don't think that's the case. I think it's a completely different competitor. His arm is much stronger. So when I look at him and how he plays, I think that he has a very unique, you know, style to him. You know, there's only a couple guys that I can, when I mentioned earlier, imitation, not innovation, there are only a few quarterbacks that come to mind where they were the first of something. The first was Joe Namath. There wasn't another Joe Namath when he came out.
In what way?
John Elway. Well, you just never saw a quarterback that was that charismatic and had the throwing motion and just had the, you know, that something special about him, that sizzle. You know, you never saw that before. you know, probably the next one was John Elway. There was no other player that you compared him to. You know, he was, you know, the first.
That scrambling and the big arm?
Yeah, big arm and just the way he played and his release picture perfect. Everything about him was just, wow, you know, it was breathtaking. The next one was Mike Vick.
Yeah.
And, you know, there wasn't another Mike Vick. And I'm just wondering, in a lot of ways, are we going to be saying the same thing about Baker Mayfield? Is he that next guy that just, you know, there is no other comparison. He's just the first Baker Mayfield.
Interesting. Hey, listen, you talk about Mike Vick. There's been a quarterback in this class compared to Mike Vick, and that's Lamar Jackson. He's completely declined to run the 40, which I find to be curious, and I think a lot of folks found that to be a little bit puzzling as well. But I love that we got you on the horn, Steve Clarkson, because I know that you can empathize with something like this.
Well, I actually give him a little bit of credit for this, because here's the thing. You know, it's that old adage in the courtroom, you're the lawyer, if you don't know the answer, don't ask the question.
There you go.
We know he's extremely fast, right? How fast? Yeah, we know he's fast enough. I don't see any footage. I don't see any footage of him getting caught from behind or anything like that.
Yeah.
But if he runs a 4.29 or something in that category, it was kind of like, well, we expected it.
Yeah.
If he runs a 4.4 and above,
I get what
you're
saying.
He's not as fast as we thought. So where's the win, right? So I kind of get that. So he's saying to people, look, I'm not going to get caught up in the speed thing. I know I'm athletic. You know I'm athletic. That's why we're here. And the comparisons to Mike Vick are favorable. But Mike Vick was a bona fide 4.2 and change in the 40.
Yep.
Right? So just compare me to Mike. I'll take it. You know, I don't need to do anything else for you. So let's go on to the next subject.
Now, the reason I bring it up with you especially is because, and again, the reason I say that you can empathize is that you're a quarterback out of San Jose State, highly productive there. You came out in an era where, again, black quarterbacks had a tough go of it, man. And you declined to run the 40 as well.
Well, you know, it was one of those things where I actually didn't decline. I just ran it slower than I should have.
Okay.
And I did that because I had teams that were looking at me at playing safety. And actually the 49ers, for one, wanted me to play safety. And I was like, I'm not playing safety. Are you kidding? Contact was the last thing I wanted to have. So, you know, I made sure that, you know, I ran a high 4.8. But you know, look, it was a different time. I mean, now it's, you know, I look at it and I wish I probably would have taken a different approach, because at the end of the day, just playing probably would have meant a lot more. But
I
like what I'm doing now. I have the opportunity to influence a lot of lives out here doing what I'm doing, and being able to talk to you about other players and what their prospects can be. You know, those are things that I certainly enjoy, and I can't wait for the draft and see how this all plays out.
Hey, man, can you give us your story real quick? Because I know a lot of folks don't necessarily know your background a little bit, but you played quarterback at San Jose State, again, highly productive. You signed for a hot second with the Broncos, then went to the CFL. Okay, then what?
Well, I played 2 years in the CFL, and it was actually an enjoying experience. It was a little different. I played for Jack Elway, the backup to San Jose State. So that was John's father. I've known John since I was in the seventh grade.
Interesting.
And it was just a different time. Ed Luther was the quarterback before me, and he was the number one pick of the San Diego Chargers in 1980, which was their first pick of the second round. They didn't have a first round pick. And, you know, he played for Jack Elway his last year. Yeah. And I had the opportunity to take over for Ed, and we were called the Pac-10. At that time, we were the Pac-10 killers. And we, you know, I'd beaten John Elway 2 out of 3 years. We'd beaten Cal, and we beat a number 4 in the rank Arizona State team. So we had a chance to really do some things.
That's amazing.
I broke all of the San Jose State passing records, and then when it came time to get drafted, I wasn't drafted.
Yeah.
Back in those days, ESPN had just started covering the draft. The draft was 12 rounds. It was all on the same day, and basically the draft was off air after the third round. And in that particular year, I was on Mel Kiper's board, and a guy by the name of Dr. Z from Sports Illustrated. I was like the seventh or eighth best quarterback in the draft. And if you recall, 1983, the NFL's greatest draft of all time,
that's right.
There were six quarterbacks that went in the first round. Yeah. Dan Marino barely made it. And I remember, you know, right before they went off the air, Mel Kiper was going and says, "Why have Steve Clarkson as my next quarterback?" And I'm thinking, you know, of course, this is long before cell phones and things of that nature.
Yeah.
And people kept calling my house, and I kept thinking it was an NFL team, and it was people saying, "Well, where'd you go?" Air. So you can imagine the stress level that I had, and it was tough. It was a game I grew up loving to death, and I wasn't drafted, and I had to answer the question, and first thing that came to mind was, you know, did you not get drafted because you were black?
Yeah.
Well, certainly I felt that way. I didn't convey that because I refused to think of that. Mm. But ultimately what it also did was it actually helped me to get through the process, because I felt like I couldn't get into the league for this reason, and there was nothing I could do.
Yeah.
So why cry about it? I still love the game. I still think I can contribute to the game. I went on to, you know, go to the Denver Broncos training camp. When I went there, John Elway was at an Indianapolis Colts. So when I chose Denver, I went there thinking I have a pretty good chance to, you know, make the team. And lo and behold, about 4 days later, John Elway shows up in Denver. And, you know, so that was pretty traumatic. But at least I kind of knew the score. So it wasn't like, you know, I went into camp thinking, well, I really had a good shot. My opportunity was just play as well as I can, stay as long as you can, and then get picked up by somebody else. But I always just felt like I didn't want to be that guy that just chased, you know, opportunity after opportunity.
I felt like,
you know, I just wanted to play. And if I played, if it was meant to be, it was meant to be. If not, move on and do something else. So fortunately for me, I didn't, you know, get caught up in the trap that I had to play it. Like I said, I enjoy what I'm doing now, and I enjoy that I still have an effect on the game. And every time I watch games on Saturdays and Sundays, I can see some part of me on the field, and that's not so bad.
Dane, there you go. Steve Clarkson, noted quarterbacks coach, joining us here on the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. Hey, real quick, Steve, is it true that you basically went to the CFL and then you were working at a restaurant before you got into private quarterback coaching?
Yeah, I was
is that true?
Manager. Yes, it's true. I was a district manager for Black Angus Restaurant.
Wow.
I had like 18 stores that I represented.
That's awesome, man.
And, you know, the greatest thing was back then they had it was called a management card, Black Angus Management Co. And it was a card that was, you know, you got to remember this is 1984.
Yeah.
And every year they would load up my card. It was $75,000 worth of credit.
Whoa.
So that I could go to any one of my stores and essentially, you know, eat for free or treat whoever I wanted to treat. So you can imagine I was a pretty popular guy. And back
That's
in
great,
those
man.
Days, Black Angus was actually half restaurant, half nightclub. So on certain nights, Exactly. So it wasn't too bad. But, yeah, I had actually gotten contact by a guy by the name of Danny Klein. His son was Perry Klein, and they come from a family of gymnasts. And they had gotten my name from my aunt, who thought I might enjoy coaching. And so the dad, Danny, called me up and asked me to, you know, if I wanted to coach this Pop Warner team. I said, no, I'm working like 80 hours a week at Black Angus. And he says, well, aren't you the same guy that played at San Jose State? I said, yeah. He says, well, my son and I used to watch the Elway versus Elway games.
Huh.
And so we're very familiar with you. And, you know, just wanted to know if there was any opportunity. My son has never played quarterback. The football coach recruited him, and I'd love for you to give him some lessons. I'll pay for your time or what have you. And, you know, whenever you're in town. And I said, well, yeah, I wanted to charge you, but next time I'm in Santa Monica, that's where you lived.
Yeah.
I'll give you a call. A couple weeks later, had the opportunity to meet him. And the first thing I remember was in watching him, he looked identical to Sean Penn, the actor. That was the first thing that struck me, and I said, wow. You know, I took him on the field, and we did a few things. But, you know, he didn't really do anything that caught my eye, just kind of gave him a few lessons, what have you. And I really didn't know what I was doing either. I mean, you know, funny, you play quarterback, but trying to teach quarterback play is completely different than most people would think. But I had a marketing background, and I remember when I said, hey, well, good luck to you, keep in touch, blah, 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 as I'm leaving, something made me look back before I got in the car. And I turned back, and he had put the football down, Perry.
Yeah.
And he started doing these backflips and cartwheels, and every time he would do one of these flips, he'd land in a pinpoint perfect landing. And I remember closing the door back, and I went back to him, and I said, do another one. And he would do something. And I said, do another one. And every time I would say, do another one, he would add something to it. And a light bulb went in my head, and I said, if I can teach this guy to play quarterback, and he threw a touchdown, every time he threw a touchdown, he did one of these crazy flips, we could be famous. And that's exactly how the quarterback guru started. And this was back in 1986.
That's lovely, man. I love it. Hey, it's a great story, and again, it was great catching up with you. It's been a long time since you and I have chatted, but it's great to get you on, man. I appreciate the time.
Well, I appreciate you having me. I can't wait for the draft to see how this unfolds. This is really probably one of the more exciting years I've ever seen for the draft.
Man. Yeah, you and me both. You and everybody. So there you go. Steve Clarkson, Noted Quarterbacks Coach. Follow him on Twitter as well. Steve, thanks for the time, man. Appreciate it.
Take care, guys.
Lots to digest there from Steve Clarkson, no doubt.
First off,
comparisons between Rosen and Aikman.
First off, let's get into this whole Black Angus used to be a nightmare.
That's breaking news.
Right? I mean, you can get a steak and get your boogie on, too. Like,
now, hold up. Like, he had damn near $100,000 worth of credits?
At Black Angus.
At Black Angus in 1985?
Do some damage.
Oh, my.
That's a lot of steaks.
That's a lot of steaks.
Oh, man. Come on now.
Loaded baked potatoes.
You know
man.
What I'm saying?
All of it.
Come on. Let's get it. But, yeah, no, comparing Rosen to Aikman, comparing Sam Darnold
to Wentz.
To Wentz.
Mayfield might be the first of his kind at quarterback.
I felt like that was a pretty bold statement,
too. That was a big statement.
It's interesting.
I mean, he's listing off a couple of guys.
Don't put Baker in a corner.
You know what I'm saying? Man. What'd you guys think of some of the comparisons that he had brought up, though?
The Wentz one for Darnold, it surprised me a little bit, but then it made me think, and I think we've talked about it on this podcast, the Bucky Brooks analogy of, you know, Josh Rosen, using a basketball term, Josh Rosen is a shooter, Sam Darnold is a scorer.
Mm.
And I feel that way about Carson Wentz. Like, you know, not everything he does is pretty. I mean, he has a lot of really nice things and makes some great throws. Not everything he does is pretty, but he finds a way to make plays, and he finds a way to put points on the board. And I think Sam Darnold is sort of that guy in that way, too, where a lot of things he does looks awkward, and he'll make some throws or he'll fumble some balls, and then he'll have you scratching your head, and then he'll make a throw that just drops your jaw. Yeah. And I do think that is, in that way at least, the comparison is kind of apt.
Scrappy on the ground, too. And that's kind of what I liked about the comparison, too, right, is that, you know, Carson Wentz is not necessarily, the quickest or the most, you know, lateral guy. Neither is Darnold. But, I mean, it's funny that he brought up the fact that he had played a little bit of linebacker in high school, because you can kind of sort of see that when he gets out and running. You know what I mean? He starts running, dropping those shoulders. You're like, get down, get down, get down. He don't want to get down. That's Sam Darnold right there for you. So I can kind of see that a little bit. But, yeah, man, it's an interesting story that Steve Clarkson has, because, again, most folks, of course, know him as a quarterback's coach. Oh, by the way, he's also, you know, worked with who's that kid from Alabama that came in?
The young kid that Tua, came in the championship?
Oh, yeah, Tua. Yeah.
Tua. Yeah,
Tua. I totally agree with him with the Lamar Jackson not running the 40 thing. I think so much has been overblown about him and not having agent stuff. And the case with him not running the 40 is he basically only has anything to lose.
You're
like
right.
It's
that,
just confirming, like,
true.
You don't need him to run the 40 to know that he's blowing by safeties on 75-yard touchdown runs.
Yeah,
like,
you're right.
What does he gain?
I guess the only counter argument would be that you can get some serious buzz if you throw down a hard 40, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but then like he said, what if he stumbles? What if there's a wind blowing into him and he runs a 4.5 40 instead or something like that? Then everybody's gonna be like, this kid, we want to be a wide receiver. Now he's not even that fast. Can't take him in the first round because he's, you know, he's not as athletic as we thought.
Yeah, no, that part I didn't think about, and I think that does make a whole hell of a lot of sense. So yeah, but it's interesting, right? That that Steve himself, you know, decided to run the 40 but ran it slow on purpose because he didn't want to
never
play
heard
another
of,
position.
It was just kind of amazing. I've never heard of anybody sandbagging the 40. But I do think one of the things about Lamar Jackson is he has – and I feel like we get one or two of these guys every year who very much try to control the draft process outside of the norm. And I know that, that doesn't sit well with classic football guy.
True.
It does not sit well with classic NFL guy. But, you know, obviously he has come into this. He and his mom working together in this thing have come in this adamant that he's going to be a quarterback and adamant that he's going to do it his way. And, you know, there will be talk about whether you know, what he's doing is right or wrong, if he's making a mistake. But at the end of the day, one, it's going to be his way that he gets drafted. And two, it goes back to tape. I mean, we, you know, you guys were saying, we've seen this guy play. We know what he can do. How much different is it going to be because he didn't, you know, run in shorts?
So I think, I have been critical of him, you know, representing himself through this process, mostly because I think he could be, if he had, you know, big CAA representation, IMG representation, or whatever it might be, I think we're talking about a guy that could have drummed up enough interest to be a top three pick. Now, that being said, that's such a short process, right? If he ends up going in the first round, which it sounds like he will, if he ends up going somewhere in the first round, then who cares?
I really don't know that an agent would have pushed him into the top three, honestly.
Man.
As Marcus,
big
as Marcus
arm,
said, too.
You know, a lot of these quarterbacks, again, have flaws, as we've talked about, and certainly Lamar's got some as well, but man, just that athleticism and that arm, it just would have, I think it would have propelled him.
But yeah, top three? No, not with a bunch of the tall white statues we have that fit the archetype of football guy's dream quarterback.
I hear what you're saying. But yeah, no, I mean, it's if he does go in the first round, hey, it's all good because I think he's going to end up with a better team, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be a better fit.
There's some great spots he could land at later in the first round, even like a Miami, or you know, put him with Adam Gase, and they've got some weapons: Kenyon Drake, Kenny Stills, Devontae Parker. Like,
sure.
You know, there's some rumors. I mean, they just signed RG3, but the Ravens could be after another quarterback. Or...
Yeah, it's crazy because we're also entering a period. I mean, let's say the Chargers wanted to go quarterback. It's not a terrible idea. I'm Philip Rivers getting up there. Let's say the Saints wanted to go quarterback. Not a terrible idea. You know, if Lamar Jackson's got to develop into an actual NFL quarterback, who the hell do you want him learning from? You know what I mean? Drew Brees, let's go. You know what I mean? So it's, again, not saying that there's any rumors of those type of things. But that being said, crazy things happen in the draft.
Yeah, that they do. It's going to be a fun one to watch, that's for sure.
Daps.
Now we're talking about dog bites and dipping. Daps.
You know, if you like creepy rabbits, this movie's for you.
What kind of degenerate are you?
Godzilla is down there.
This is why I love this group of guys. We're like, whirlwind, there it goes, boom.
Daily dap time.
I have to say, I'm not quite used to the drops yet. Like when it starts with like dap dap, I'm like,
oh yeah.
I still think it's you, like still like talking.
Well, no, but here's the thing: because we did the manual drops for so long,
too long.
yes. we really could have done that 6-8 months ago, but
we also didn't have a stable producer. We were going through some transitions. Now we got
true, balance the ship.
We were trying to find ourselves.
She brought balance to the force.
Yeah, now you have me.
Yeah, exactly.
Had a baby. But no, I just figured since we did the manual drops for so long and it became part of the fabric of our podcast that try to maintain some of that.
I appreciate that.
In the new drops. The actual
at least just have some music and continuity.
And, you know, what the hell. It's and again, a franchise is living on in this drop as well, so there you go. All right, let's start Daily Dap Time. Alex Gelhar, what do you got? I mean, my God, son, it's been a month.
It's been a long time. I'll have to get a couple in here.
Yes.
Let's see. Actually, I think I'm going to go with four. I'll Ooh, there we yeah. go. Four. I haven't been here in a while. I got a lot of stuff to dap.
This is ranking in.
Okay.
True.
I'm going to go much faster than rank. First one, I'm going to dap an indie game my friend told me about, and I got it on Steam. It's called Into the Breach. It's like a real-time strategy, one of those grid-based ones, you know, like a lot of the old-school tactics games. However, what's interesting about this one is that you know what the enemy's going to do ahead of time every round. Like, it'll show you where they're going to go. So you have to try and, like manipulate your guys around the board to combat that. But it's a really brutal game because if you make a mistake, you're just toast.
Got it.
So it's an interesting element of strategy. I'd give it a shot. It's only like $15 if you're into those type of games.
Okay.
Into the Breach. It's from the makers of Faster Than Light, I think is what their earlier game was. Also going to daily adapt the show, Brooklyn 99. You've probably seen me tweeting about it if you follow me on there. I've had a bunch of people tell me to watch it. Finally got into it a couple weeks ago. Now I'm like 3 seasons deep. It's hilarious, really well written, great cast of characters. It's on Hulu, so can't recommend that enough. Going to daily adapt a movie, obviously, while I'm here.
Obviously.
Went to see Love, Simon about like a week ago, I think. Also like an indie movie from Greg Berlanti, who you might recognize. He's one of the main showrunners and executive producers on Flash and Arrow on TV, and he's done a number of TV shows. But this is the movie about a young gay boy in high school coming to grips with his sexuality and trying to come out to his family and everybody like that. And it's just a really touching story, and it's really well told, and it's got a great young cast. And Jennifer Garner and Josh Duhamel play his parents, and they're fantastic. But I would recommend you go see it. I think it's a really good movie this time of year because we're getting into all of the blockbuster fare.
Yeah.
So go check that out if you can while it's in if it's in your theater near you. And then the last daily dap,
here we go,
has to go to El Tráfico.
What's Woo! El Tráfico?
El Tráfico is the first game. Now it's going to be the rivalry forever between the LA Galaxy and LAFC in MLS. Oh. It's a riff on El Clásico.
Yes, with the traffic.
With right. the traffic for Los Angeles. So it was the first one ever right. this past weekend. I went, and it was a big game. There were big stakes because LAFC had been playing better. They've come in on a hot streak, scoring a lot of goals. The Galaxy were injured. The Galaxy were hosting their home stadium, and it was probably like – it was a sold-out crowd at StubHub Center. I think probably like 60-40 Galaxy to LAFC fans. They turned out numbers because it's the first time their stadium isn't done yet. So it's the first time LAFC fans were able to see their team in Los Angeles. So first game of the rivalry, huge stakes. And the Galaxy, as we mentioned, had just signed Zlatan Ibrahimovic, 36 years old, coming off a major injury last year. He'd only played, I think, 187 total minutes since last November because he's old and coming off this injury. So weren't sure if we were going to see him. We're hoping it. Needed it for bragging rights, the first one of the thing. So we're there, Galaxy go down 2-0 before halftime. Then 60th minute, they score an own goal. So they're down 3-0. I'm there with my buddy. Like, this is my worst night. This is our worst nightmare. Yeah. This is a disaster. Like, we came here, they're gonna beat the crap out of us in our own house.
Okay.
Terrible. Galaxy get one back. Crowd starts chanting, "We want Zlatan." You see, he's warming up on the sideline.
He wasn't in the game.
He wasn't
no,
in the
he
game.
Did not
no,
start.
No, no, he didn't. Oh. He only came in the 71st minute. So he finally comes in. Immediately his presence is felt because he's such a dynamic player. Draws some defense. Galaxy score header. Now it's 2-3. Momentum's changing.
Sure.
Then he scores like one of the goals of the year. It's just a
bonk.
Half volley from like 45 yards out. Like, I mean, this is the kind of goal that even people in Europe are like, damn. So that ties at 3-3. And then he scores the winner in stoppage time
does
on a header.
Yep. On a
yes.
Wow.
So his first game with the Galaxy.
Oh, wow.
And what's also awesome, why I want a daily depth and spending some
time
on it.
Wait, he scored
two goals in his debut in 20 minutes
yep.
to complete a comeback victory, which in MLS history is only the second time any team has ever come back from a 3-0 deficit to win.
That's amazing.
So his first game, and also the stakes just for the MLS, I thought it was really cool because this game was on Big Fox, not FS1, not FS2, not ESPN8, the Ocho. It was on Fox. So it's a huge rivalry. You've got the first debut of this big player. It was like an all-time MLS game, just a phenomenally entertaining game.
Classic.
And all the goals were great. I mean, aside from the own goal,
right.
which was spectacularly sad, like all the rest of the goals, you had great headers, you had great shots, you had some one-timers. It was just a phenomenal experience. It was honestly like one of the best sporting events I've ever been to. Like just atmosphere, stakes, the entire game, the way it played out itself. So, daps to that. If you haven't watched it, I'm sure they're replaying it a bunch, or just look it up. But it was an amazing game start to finish. The narratives, the delivery, everything, just incredible.
So here's my question. Does LAFC now have to wear 3-0 like the Falcons wear?
Oh.
Is that what they do they have to wear that now for the rest of eternity?
Well, they may.
I mean, it wasn't a playoff game.
No.
I see.
And that was the thing. It was the first time these two teams had ever met. So, like, it is a rivalry geographically, and it's going to be a big rivalry between the two teams.
Yeah.
But there is no history yet. So, also, for the fact that the rivalry starts
with
blowing a 3-0 lead.
Pretty good start.
It is pretty epic. And the best part was, too, in the post-game interview, Zlatan said they asked for Zlatan, and I gave them Zlatan. Like, he speaks in the third person all the time. And it's just the man was incredible. But his first goal, seriously, James, if you haven't seen it, we'll pull it up after the podcast. It is incredible.
Bananas.
I haven't seen it yet. But, I will.
Daily Dabs to El Tráfico, if you haven't watched it, just Google it, or at least just watch the highlights. They don't quite do it justice, but you can hear how loud. I mean, it's only like a 27-person stadium.
Yeah.
That place was loud.
Okay. I mean,
it was awesome.
Sure, louder than any Chargers game.
See, I was going to go. I was going to leave it alone.
Yeah, we weren't going to – I wouldn't say that, but
I was going to leave it alone.
Yeah.
Probably the case. Okay. MG, my guy Marcus Grant, what do you got?
I guess saying DAP is sort of – I don't know if it's the proper word, but
– You want to talk about something?
I do want to talk about something.
Okay, what you got?
So today is the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. Obviously a major moment in American history, in kind of world history. And so I would just recommend going back and reading some of his his writings, stuff like that. I strongly recommend Letter from a Birmingham Jail.
It's one of the best.
It is one of the best. And it's just worth going back and reading. And reading, obviously, in the context of 2018 and how much it still applies. A lot of these things still apply. A lot of these things are still issues in American life and American society. And also just remembering the fact that for as much as he is beloved now, that wasn't the case 50 years ago. That folks didn't love MLK the way they do now.
That's
so,
true.
Controversial
figure. Sure.
Yeah, without a doubt. So, I mean, it's a day, I think, kind of a reflection, a day, I think, where we can all try to be better people. I know it's, hopefully for most of us that is the goal every day, but that's it. Just kind of, take some opportunity to go and read and, I think try to be better.
I like it. I'll give a daily dap out to the show Homeland on Showtime.
That show's still on?
Really?
It is still on.
How does Gary Matheson still have a job?
I don't know. Well, the bottom line is, I just started season one maybe like a month ago.
Oh, season one is phenomenal.
Maybe like 3 weeks ago I started Homeland.
Season one is incredible.
Because I never had Showtime forever. And so I finally have Showtime now, and my buddy's like, dude, how have you not watched Homeland? He's like, you have Showtime? You haven't watched Homeland? I'm like, okay, I guess I'm watching Homeland. So I started watching Homeland. I watched episode one. I'm like, ooh, this is going to be good.
Oh, yeah.
So then I got my wife on Homeland. All right? So now she's watching Homeland, and and we were watching the show together. Episode by episode, and it would be like at first 3 weeks ago, it was like, okay, let's, we put the kid to bed, we, and then we, cuddle up and watch an episode of Homeland and go to bed. My wife has a really bad problem of binge watching things.
Uh-oh.
But I'm not a binge watcher. I'm not that guy, right? So then after a week of watching Homeland together, I find out that she's been binge watching this.
So she's way ahead of you now.
Work.
So she's way ahead of you.
Oh my God. Unbelievably far ahead. And I'm like, how are you watching this? I thought we were watching this show together.
So wait, she was binge watching it and then coming home with you on the DL and then coming back home with you and watching episodes she'd already seen and been like,
yes.
Oh wow.
Oh man, I can't believe that happened.
Wow, what a twist.
It would be stuff like where I would go to the kitchen to go get something like a snack or something, and she would pause it, and she's just like, oh yeah, this just kind of looks like it might get interesting here. It's like, what's going on here? Anyway, so I found out that she had been binge watching.
Wow.
I would love for her to suspect something, be like, I wonder if, and then like to tell you something super specific that actually happens.
But so I just finished season one. She just finished season four.
Okay.
So
she's way ahead of you.
Season one is incredible. I thought the show started to go downhill pretty quick after that. But
well, I don't know.
I'll be curious to see what you think.
I just finished season one, and again, I would co-sign that.
That episode
season one was really good.
I forget if it's the second to last episode or the last episode, but I remember actually sweating watching it. Like, I was just sitting on my couch watching television, like, it's like the airplane gif when he's like trying to fly it and sweat's just pouring out of him. I was losing it. That season one is incredible, but I was disappointed with the rest of it.
Okay.
And then I eventually just gave up.
Well, that's good. That's good to know. I won't get too invested later on, so that's good. But yeah, no. So yeah, she's been sneaking in episodes, and I'm like, how can you be doing this to me? This is just not right. Anyway, she's so obsessed with the show now that now she's like, she literally told me, she's like, I do need to take a break from this show because she was on the freeway in traffic and there was like one of those motorcycles, in California, right in between the lines. And there was a motorcycle coming up to her and it stopped next to her car and she was legit worried for a second that this motorcycle was going to try to pop a bomb underneath her car. And I'm like,
yeah, you've been watching too much Homeland.
Babe, you need to take a break, dude.
Now, having now met your wife, this makes this story so
true. True.
She's like, yeah, I need to take a break.
It's great.
Yeah,
that
you
we,
need to take a break.
It's great that we finally met her.
Because now I have a face to put
right,
to
all a face and a personality to put to all the stories.
There you go. All right, there you go. Producer Christina, what do you got?
Well, last week, I think I dapped up Breaking Bad. Mm. Well, so I finished it.
Nice.
I have now finished
it. Welcome to the crew.
How long did it take? It took you like 2 weeks.
For the entire series?
I feel like it took her like, you know, 4.5 days.
Well, for the entire series, a few weeks.
Okay.
But that last...
7 seasons you got done.
No, it's 5. It's 5 seasons.
Oh, okay. I thought... Oh, okay.
I mean, I'm also a binge watcher, so like I can watch episode after episode, even if they're like an hour long.
Well, and
I
that show,
kill off a few.
That show is addicting. Like
oh,
I remember
it is.
When I first finally got into it, it was like 4 seasons deep, and I watched 3 seasons.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
In an shameful amount of time.
The final few episodes, there was no chance. I had to watch all of them at once.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Once it started to pick up, I was like, I need to see the end. I can't go to bed now. I have to see what happens. But so I finished that and was like, well, what do I do now? My friend recommended Westworld. So I was like, okay, you know, it's different.
Oh, season premiere coming
up. So, yeah. So
I can't wait.
Perfect timing.
So how far are you into Westworld?
3 episodes in, and I started last night.
Oh.
So.
Wow.
Okay.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
That is impressive.
I mean, especially
those first two episodes.
The first episode's like 70 minutes.
Right. And I will
and
say,
I was like, okay.
As somebody who went through the first season, I don't blame the people who tapped out. Because
I don't either.
Because it is slow.
It is.
You know,
I think the first episode, the second through like second, third, fourth episode are definitely they're trying to establish the world, and it goes along.
Yeah,
it takes a while. So I mean, it does get better, but business picks up. I don't blame anybody who tapped out.
Yeah, I don't either.
Not at all.
Business picks up in the back end, but I will say this, man. I'm worried about season two. I'm not sure.
In a bad way.
Yeah.
It's a great storyline. I think there's a lot of potential.
Yeah,
I hope they do it justice.
Yes, I agree. So I'm looking forward to it. All right, so there you go. That's the show.
Wait, were you just doing one dap? I wasn't making sure.
Oh,
I had four. Like, I don't want to cut you off if you had more.
I don't have any.
Okay, good.
All right, we'll run that music. Let's get the hell out of here. For MG, my guy, Marcus Grant, the Whiz Kid from Wisconsin, Alex Gelhar, welcome back, bud.
So good to be back.
And producer Christina, I'm James Goh. We will catch you later.